It's time for Operation Freedom with your host, Dr. Dave Janda, on Southeast Michigan's conservative powerhouse, Wham Talk 1600.
Welcome back to Operation Freedom, folks. I'm Dr. Dave Janda, broadcasting from our Freedom Bunker at Wham Talk 1600. We're here every Sunday for you from 2 to 5 Eastern. Also available 24-7, Operation Freedom YouTube channel. Also available at DaveJanda.com, both the free, the public side, as well as the subscription side. 30 cents a day, $9 a month. One of the biggest bangs for the buck in all the internet. You get the podcast on the subscription side to this show and every show. Our archives all the way back to October 2010. The Insider Insight Show, where we do a deep dive on bringing an expert forward. This past week, I brought past president of Microsoft Canada forward, Frank Clegg, who essentially is a whistleblower, talking about the 5G technology, the good, the bad, the ugly. I assure you, that information will never be seen, heard, read, or experienced in the bought-off, lamestream, fake media. And frankly, I believe every person should get their hands on that information that Frank presents. In addition, we have our WTF show, which is a show I do every Wednesday. It's a video format show on the subscription platform where I bring information from my sources from behind the curtain forward on geopolitical issues. This past week, I brought seven pieces of information that I call the Magnificent Seven Pieces of Information that the bought-off lamestream fake media will never touch. I hope you'll join us both on the free side as well as on the subscription side, 30 cents a day. My next guest is someone who is an incredibly enlightening individual, incredibly courageous. And every time he comes on this show, I get a huge number of emails, folks, that demand, not just ask, demand that I get him back on the show ASAP. He is an incredibly unique individual, Dr. Michael Rechtenwald. He is the anti-PC professor. He's formerly based at NYU, the hub of conservatism. I'm just kidding. He's also the author of a number of great books, all great books. But his latest is Springtime for Snowflakes, Social Justice and Its Postmodern Paratage. His essays have appeared in numerous periodicals and anthologies, including the British Journal for History of Science, Endeavor, and George Eliot in Context. He has also made media appearances on numerous national and international networks, including MSNBC, Fox News, Fox Business News, and many more. He obtained his bachelor's degree from the University of Pittsburgh, his master's degree from Case Western University, and his PhD from the great Carnegie Mellon University. It's my honor to welcome back former professor of global liberal studies at NYU, Michael Rechtenwald. Dr. Rechtenwald, welcome back to Operation Freedom.
Thank you so much, Dr. J. It's great to be here.
Okay.
I don't know if I can live up to it.
That and more. I know you will, Michael. Michael, so your book, Springtime for Snowflakes, Social Justice and Its Postmodern Paratage. When folks finish reading that book, what are a couple of the takeaways you want them to walk away with?
But what they'll understand is all these crazy, rituals and routines and statements and phrases and of the social justice people. They'll understand where all this craziness came from. They'll actually know the philosophical and historical roots of this insanity, and then they can combat it because they'll also see the flaws in it, in its illogic and its great, you know, just why it's intellectually and morally and otherwise flawed.
What are the foundational pillars that the social justice movement are based on? Because once we know the pillars, it makes it easier to attack.
Yes, that's right. There are three major ones. First of all, it's postmodern theory, which is a post-Marxist theoretical movement of leftists, but anti-Marxist leftists, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
Then it also they form the philosophical basis of the movement,
mm-hmm.
and the ideas that they have come from that, although they're very much caricatured. But also, there are Maoist and Stalinist disciplinary routines involved.
Mm.
They take certain elements of Maoist and Stalinist political, punitive measures and things like that, and they incorporate it into their whole outlook. Like, for example, calling out someone, they call call-out culture. This comes from Maoism. where you have these struggle sessions in under Maoism, where you know the person has to be subjected to the criticisms of a whole crowd of comrades, and they rip them to shreds verbally and sometimes physically. This thing called autocritique or self-criticism that comes from the Soviet Union and from China, communist China, and in this case, the person himself or herself does this denigration on their own self. They rip themselves apart verbally, tell you how horrible they are, what immoral, ideologically flawed bourgeois characters they have, and so on and so forth. Postmodernism, Maoism, and Stalinism.
So, Michael, many people are thinking, wow, how did this guy, who's anti-social justice warriors, how did he make it through all the educational system to the point where he was a professor at NYU? In fact, your background's very interesting. In fact, Michael, someone asked me about you the other day, and they said, well, you know, his background, was he, no, don't laugh. And they said, was he always a conservative? I go, no, he'd never been a conservative. In fact, he was and tell me if I'm wrong, I described you in your early years as someone who was left of Marx. Is that accurate?
I was definitely far left. In fact, my latest political moniker before my transition was left communism. I was a left communist, the left of the Bolsheviks.
So then people are asking, well, wait a minute. If Mike Reckonwald was left of the Bolsheviks, left of Marx, what? How did he get to being the anti-PC professor? What happened?
There was one element about me that they couldn't, that really isn't clear, and that is that I was always libertarian at base.
Ah.
And so that's the left of Bolshevism, is an anti-authoritarianism. An anti-totalitarianism that was a more idealistic version of communism that thought, you know, the workers really will have control, not the party, not the bureaucrats, et cetera, et cetera. So there's that. And also inside of me, there was also a streak of, you know, fierce independence that even as a Marxist, when I wrote essays and gave talks, I had a different, you know, there was something, I gave different aspects to various topics than expected. I wasn't somebody repeating the patent cliche terminology and so on and so forth. But then it really did take, though, the left turning on me like vicious animals and basically with their snarls and fangs, they driving me out of the left entirely.
And in fact, as you've outlined, Mike, you have faced immense hostility, animosity, oh, yeah, threats from the intelligentsia, if you will, from fellow professors, from administration levels, correct?
Well, I can't get too specific. I'll just put it this way. There was a target on my back from Antifa. Faculty member at NYU was a member of Antifa.
How special.
Yeah, and then it radiated far beyond that. There was a huge, they weren't huge. There was a contingent of extremely hostile PC social justice types in my department, and they hated me. And especially I criticized social justice ideology. Meanwhile, I didn't criticize groups or races or genders or non-genders or gender benders or anything. I just criticized the institutional mechanisms and ideologies of social justice, and that was enough for them to set on me like a pack of wild dogs.
So, Michael, as you know, I'm based in the People's Republic of Ann Arbor. I consider it to be a sanctuary city for social justice warriors.
Wow.
Yeah. So if Mike flies here today, and Mike and Dave go down to the Diag, that's a part of the University of Michigan campus where it's like, I don't know. It's social justice warriors convocation center. You know, it's kind of like a social justice warriors Chick-fil-A, if you will.
Yeah.
So if we would go down there, Mike and Dave, right? And I said, and we're, as we're walking down, I said, hey, Mike, I want you to trigger these guys. I want you to take these guys into the stratosphere in the shortest amount of time. What would you do to trigger a social justice warrior?
I'd probably drop some phrases like just briefly, like, you know, excuse me while I luxuriated my toxic white masculinity. how are you doing today? Oh, I'm just basking in my, you know, white privilege. How are you? And, you know, just completely mock it. Because it's absolutely insane. You know, once you get into the really understanding it, there's no real reason to have any respect for this. So I have no quibbles about, you know, them feeling insulted over it at all.
So,
things like that.
So after you were on the show last time, Mike, I took a walk on the wild side down to the University of Michigan. And
okay.
Yeah, and I went down to the Diag, and there were like some groups of people, right? And I said, all I did was I said, "Hi, guys."
Oh, that is enough,
Mark. Mike, they didn't like that.
No, not at all, not at all. You know, they don't like anything but like folks or people. You can't say girls to
no.
That is enough to get you, you know, I mean, you could be in real trouble there. You could even be Me Too'd somehow or other. Anything, you know, that causes, first of all, these people are basically, shall we say, victim meters, you know?
Yeah.
They say they're victimometers.
Yeah.
they basically are walking, talking sensors for victimology.
Yeah.
So anything that feels like they're being persecuted is registered in some way on their person or in this, you know, meter that's reading the environment for, you know, hostility or microaggression or what have you.
So if someone confronts a social justice warrior and, you know, just living life, and all of a sudden there's this social justice warrior in your grill because they love to get in your grill. I mean, you say something mm-hmm. very innocuous, something very, you know, matter of nothing, you know, nothing that could be even construed as being off range. Okay. They still go off on you. So what's the best way to deal with a social justice warrior that's off the nut, you know, that's just, it just starts in your grill.
I had this happen to me at NYU after a talk that was a misfire. I never got off the ground because they wouldn't let the speaker utter a word. I was some student, social justice warrior type, started screaming at me, calling me, chanting it as loud as he could that I was a Nazi. He said it over and over and over. I turned to him and I said, "Listen, buddy. My father actually fought against the Nazis in World War II. Call me it one more time. Come on. One more time, buddy." And I turned to the whole group. I said, "Listen to this. I'm not a Nazi, folks, but you are all Stalinists. And you don't even understand why that's an insult. That's what's wrong here." That's it. Because after all, Stalin killed, you know, 40, 50 million people.
Right.
You know, the communists combined 94 million people. This is what it is. Where do the left get off having this high moral ground? Where do they get to, how are they on a high horse of morality? They have no legs to stand on. If you just read the history, they are the worst, most vicious, murderous people when in power on the planet.
Mike, it's been the Green New Deal has been purported as being this. It's going to help humanity. Don't ask me how it's going to be paid for, but it's going to be. What's your take on the Green New Deal?
I think it's a complete dud. If it were enacted, it would destroy the economy, but for reasons these people just don't understand.
Yeah,
they think that if you just like pass around, you know, wealth like their cookies, everybody's fine. But it doesn't work that way. You have to have accumulation of wealth in order to have production, so that people have jobs that produce more wealth. See, this is what they don't get. The accumulation of capital is just absolutely necessary for wealth production. And so they don't realize that if you put a 70% tax on the upper brackets, they simply won't. They'll go on what we call an investment boycott. They will not build anything. They will not make factories. They will not produce jobs. They'll just walk out of the country. most likely. So you'd ruin the country. We'd be Venezuela plus or minus, you know. I mean, it would be a disaster. That's it. So my real take on it is it's a lost leader these people are floating in order to push their agenda to some extent. There's no way they know. They have to know, unless they're completely, unwell. There's no way on earth it's ever going to be enacted as such. So this is a lost leader. They're just it's a sort of a bait and switch technique, I think, that's underway.
Folks, we're speaking with Dr. Michael Rechtenwald, the anti-PC professor. He's author of a fantastic book, Springtime for Snowflakes, Social Justice and Its Postmodern Parentage. Michael, one of the things you point out in your book, and this is something that I found to be very unique, you talk about the social justice ideology has become inherent, not just in universities and colleges or in the educational system, but it's also has become inherent in the corporate world and the and the media institutions. Educate our listeners on how it has become so inherent throughout education, the corporate world and the media.
Well, I can tell you how it happened, how it came about, and what it's characterizing its extent of influence and impact. It is everywhere. It is now. As far as education, it's K through PhD indoctrination in social justice ideology. Beyond that, all of the teachers then are propagating social justice ideology to the students, and then it therefore spreads out to the entire social body, and that's what's happened. It's in, of course, academia, social media, it's obviously clear. Corporate America, as we can see with the new woke capitalism, and it's gone farther than that. It's deeply into the state apparatuses, including the judicial system and even the Pentagon, and even the intelligence agencies. It is everywhere. So it is the dominant ideology of our time.
Now,
so I've made clear how it happened and how far it's gone. It's unbelievable.
So many people might say, oh my gosh, this is so pervasive. There's nothing we can do to get rid of it. That's not necessarily the case, is it?
No. First of all, it's like a religion, okay? So you're living in a predominantly religious country, but you don't share that religion. That's basically the attitude you have to have. You don't have to. There's nothing that should compel you to believe what they believe, because what they believe is insane, and I can talk about that. And two, they can't force their beliefs on you. This is not allowed legally. So that's how I deal with it. I realize that it's religious in nature. There's no shame in not holding these values. In fact, I would give yourself the kudos for not doing so. And there's nothing they can do to compel you. And then also, I would say, never speak their language. Don't use their vocabulary. Don't give in to their demand. Never apologize. Ever.
When you look at the, if we go in the Wayback Machine, Mike. Let's take the interview that we're doing right now, and I'm going to play it to Mike Rechtenwald in 1999.
And you are good. You are good. You just hit it right on the head. 1999, I was a PhD student at Carnegie Mellon. I was also basically a leftist talking head. On MSNBC, I'd be brought on as the punching bag, the standard liberal leftist punching bag. Actually, Joe Scarborough would have me on his show, and he was actually the right winger, and I was the left winger. So, yeah, see how things change. But I don't know what to think about him. But in any case, I would have thought you have to be crazy. There is no way that person you're describing, that'll never be me, and that's an insult. What you've said to me, that's like calling me a racist. little did I know. There were many suspicions that I held about certain things. First of all, I did not like a lot of things about the left in terms of the collectivism. I didn't like when I found myself in like marches and chanting with signs. I don't like saying the same thing over and over like a robot with a bunch of other robots. That never felt right. I felt like, listen, I'm actually an individual. Maybe I think different things than this. Two, I never liked some of the things like about Marxism, where you had to get rid of your ambition. You had to actually get rid of the idea that you loved your family more than everyone else in the world, because in 1848, in the Communist Manifesto, Marx and Engels called for the abolition of the family. So you have to get rid of a lot. I had a squelch aspect of my personality. So when it finally, when I was finally set free, you know, the blinkers came off, and I saw, you know, it was like coming out of Plato's cave. It didn't hurt at first, but then the liberation of it was incredible, incredible.
Mike, if we did a survey around the country of academic institutions, colleges, universities, what percentage do you believe of the teaching faculty agree with where you are now but are afraid to step forward and they don't have the courage you do? What percent?
That's really hard to say, because they're so cowardly that they won't let you know. They won't even whisper it to you. But my notion, I think that really there are about, amongst the social sciences and humanities professors, 95 to 99% are leftist of one type or another.
Mm-hmm.
They're left-wing. Then you have the physical sciences, which there's a lot more variation. I'd say it's 50-50 conservative and leftist or liberal. But in the humanities and social sciences, when we're talking leftist, everybody is hard left. We're talking 90-95 really hard left. So you don't have a lot of people in that in those groups that could be defectors. So maybe 1% or less. I would say I don't think it's more than 0.5% of people that would be comfortable claiming to be my friend. Frankly, that's how they are. They're terrified. They're terrified of the mob. They're terrified of the groupthink. You know, they're terrified of the tribal backlash that you get. So, yeah, there's very few.
Michael, you mentioned 1999 when you were a PhD student at Carnegie Mellon University. You would come on the bought-off lamestream fake media, as I call it, the Joe Scarboroughs of the world. And he was on the right, you were on the left. What was the last time someone in the media brought you back to present Mike Rechtenwald, the anti-PC professor? When was have you had a network come to you in the past month?
I was on Fox probably March 30th, I believe.
And what was that about?
I was on I was talking about this professor at NYU who was teaching a course about far right wingers and how they were going to expose these far right wingers, and my point was, what about all the extreme left wingers? Why is there a class about exposing the left wing? After all, as I said before, they're the most murderous contingent in history. This is the most ideologically fierce and horrifying people that have ever lived, and I. And a month before that, I was on Fox as well, talking about socialism and its prevalence amongst the university students.
Mike, how can folks follow you?
Easily at anti-PC NYU prof, anti-PC NYU prof at Twitter, or just go to my website, michaelrechtenwald.com.
Mike, I'd like to thank you for everything you have done, are doing, and will do. You're an inspiration. You take on the social justice warriors on a 24/7 basis. I thank you for that, and I look forward to our interactions in the future. Folks, you're listening to Operation Freedom. Dr. Dave Janda, broadcasting from our Freedom Bunker here at WAM Talk 1600.